for that, then I truly should not be thinking about another woman. Whoa, 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 Raoul says, sitting up straight in his chair and holding a hand up.
Stop right there. Putting the ethical issues of Nora being your therapist aside for just a moment, you cannot let your past losses dictate who you can or can't be interested in.
I pause, letting that sink in a moment.
I'm confused. Are you telling me to be interested in Nora or not?
I'm telling you, if you're ready to move on and have a relationship again, you do it, whether that is Nora or someone else.
Whether it's Nora, I press. So you're saying I can have an interest in her in particular?
Are you always this dense? Raoul asks with a slight eye roll.
Let me break it down. You deserve happiness. If you are ready to take the step forward in finding it, take the biggest damn step you can. As for Nora, she is your therapist. She cannot be involved with you. If she's not your therapist, then she can. Simple as that.
Simple as that, huh? An idea forms.
Does she want to be involved with you?
Raoul asks hesitantly.
I think she wanted to kiss me last night, but I can't be sure. It was just a moment, fleeting, but I think she was right there with me.
Shaking his head, he mutters,
Christ, I can't believe I'm sitting here trying to give advice on your love life with Nora.
He doesn't say anything else, even though it sounds like he was getting ready to unload on me. I lean forward, staring at him expectantly. Raoul's gaze lowers to his beer bottle, where he seems to contemplate something a moment. When it returns to me, he sighs.
Like I said, if you're ready to move forward to find happiness, might as well take the biggest damn step you can.
I wait for more, but nothing is forthcoming. It's then I realize it's about what he doesn't say. No warning to stay away from Nora. No reminder her career could be put in jeopardy. Raoul just stares, the gauntlet laid down at my feet. The question now is if I am ready to move forward.
Do you know where Nora is? I ask as I push up from the chair.
Up at the house, he replies with a nod of his head in that general direction. A grin comes to my face.
Okay, thanks for the talk.
Raoul nods and I spin from him, heading for the door.
Mijo, he calls.
While I'm not sure what that means, I know it's an endearment of sorts. I pivot in question.
You hurt her and I will kill you. Even though I like you, I will kill you very dead. Take your body out in the desert and dump it. No one will find you.
I don't laugh. He's quite serious, and I respect him for it. I'll do my best. Raoul nods, accepting my promise and taking another sip of his beer. I leave him, heading out of the barn and toward the main house. When I reach the door, I take a deep breath, giving myself a moment to ask myself if I am truly ready for this. I am, but only if the woman is Nora. I'm certain of that. I knock on the door. In moments, I hear her footsteps approaching. She's not surprised to see me there, giving me a welcoming surprise.
I saw your truck parked out by the barn earlier,
she says, stepping back from the threshold.
Raoul told me you were cleaning stalls. That's certainly a nice thing to do.
It's now or never, I tell myself. Don't overthink it. I step through the doorway, walk right into Nora, and put my hands to her face. The fucking cast, which comes off tomorrow, is bulky and only lets the tips of my fingers touch her, but it's enough. Dipping my head down, I firmly press my mouth to hers. She gasps in surprise, jerking slightly, and I wait for her to pull away. But she doesn't. Instead, she opens her mouth, tilts her head, and lets me kiss her just a bit deeper. She tastes like sunlight and dreams, and I'd known that's exactly what I'd feel when our mouths touched. I take what she offers, but I don't linger too long, way too much to talk about. When I pull back, Nora wears a dazed expression, a mixture of delight and dismay. I can only imagine what's running through her head. "Did you like that?" I ask hesitantly. She nods, her fingers brushing over her lips almost reflectively. "Good," I say triumphantly. "You're fired." Now she gives a full-body jerk, her eyebrows shooting high.
"I'm fired?"
"Yeah," I say with a grin. "No offense to your skills, which are mad, by the way, but if you're not my therapist, then you're not at risk of losing your license."
"But Tacker,"
she says with true concern in her voice,
"you can't just stop therapy."
"I won't," I assure her, not even an option because it's required of me. "I'll go see Dr. Dumbfuck."
"But you didn't like him,"
she points out, her voice sounding slightly panicky.
"It's not wise to—"
Cupping her cheeks, I touch my mouth to hers again. It's just as soft as last time, but I linger longer. I continue to kiss her until I feel her entire body relent. Reluctantly, I pull back. Her eyes are closed, but they flutter open. I love that she's even more dazed right now. "If that felt like it meant something to you," I say, speaking slowly so she understands the surety behind my words, "then let's give this a chance."
"What is this?"
she asks gently, and I can see the worry is for a bit more than just her license now. I'm damaged goods, a risk to her heart.
"I don't know, Nora. I just know that I feel very much alive when I'm near you or talking to you or kissing you. I know you're the first person who has made me see the world in color again. And while you are an amazing therapist, that really has more to do with the person you are and not your counseling skills."
Her gaze moves off to the side, and she nibbles at her lower lip a moment.
"That kiss meant something,"
she admits, and my entire body relaxes in relief to hear her say that.
"But I don't know if this is a good idea, Tacker."
"If I see another therapist, you won't get in any trouble," Nora holds up her hand.
"I'm not worried about me. I'm worried about you."
That gives me pause. Of course she's worried about me. It's her duty as my therapist. But I also know, because I can see it in the way she looks at me, that her worry extends to a deeper, more personal level. Perhaps I need to be worried too.
"Listen,"
Nora says, taking a step back from me.
"I have another session in about 15 minutes, and I'm booked for the rest of the afternoon, but we have our regular counseling session tomorrow, so we'll discuss this some more then."
"That's not going to work for me," I say softly.
"Why not?"
"Because I fired you," I remind her, "and I'm calling Dr. Dumbfuck on the way out of here to set up an appointment with him. But I will be back tonight to pick you up at 7 p.m. for dinner, and we can talk about it then."
"I can't go out on a date with you,"
she says in exasperation. I take a long step toward her, slide my hand to the nape of her neck, and pull her to me for another kiss. She puts her hands on my chest, attempting to hold me at bay, but that lasts for about 2 seconds before she relents. Fuck, she tastes good. Her lips are so soft. When I pull back, I say, "Don't call it a date if it makes you feel better. I'll be back at 7. And with that, I turn on my heel and walk out of her house. I have no clue what in the hell I'm doing, but deep down inside, I know I'm on the right path.
Chapter 21. Nora. My hands are sweating, and my stomach is flip-flopping. I don't ever recall being this nervous for a date before, except, I remind myself, this isn't a date. But it is something. In my entire adult life, I've never had a man make me feel the way Tacker does just by his mere presence. While we've talked about serious issues and shared immense grief, we've also laughed together, talked as friends, communicated outside of counseling sessions via phone and text, especially the week he was gone for away games. That, in and of itself, is a breach of my ethical duties to him. So the whole dating thing is probably moot. I not only can't have an intimate relationship with him, but I also can't have a friendship with him, not really. There's too much room for exploitation, which is why we have these rules. Regardless, tonight is not a date, no matter how he makes me feel. There's a knock on my front door, and I swear my hands actually start dripping. I give a quick wipe of them on my butt, which is clad in a pair of nice jeans. Not the type I wear on the ranch, but skinny ones with frayed ends. I tell myself the fact I'm wearing a pretty blouse and a pair of flirty wedge espadrilles doesn't mean this is a date. Taking a breath, I send up a silent prayer for guidance and open the door. There's no other way to say it, other than Tacker is a beautiful man. When I'd first seen him, I thought him handsome. But as I've watched his transformation, watched him start to find joy again, he's simply beautiful. I don't notice he's got one hand behind his back before he whips it out, holding a bouquet of fresh flowers out to me. God. When was the last time a man brought me flowers before a date? Never, Nora. It's never happened. And it's not a date. I can't accept those, I say, sadly eyeballing the beautiful blooms. Tacker just smiles. They're actually for Raoul. Can you put them in a vase and hold them until he comes by tomorrow morning? My heart flutters over his gallant attempt to give me a gift I should not accept. Smiling, I reach for the flowers. Okay, sure. Stepping back from the threshold, I invite him in with a sweep of my other hand. When I turn for the kitchen, he shuts the door behind himself before following me. I can't go out to dinner with you tonight, I say as I walk, not daring to make eye contact. I don't want him to see how disappointed I am to even have to say that.
Then what do you want to do?
He asks, his tone way too jovial and accommodating. I head to a cabinet, pull out a small vase and bring it to the sink. As I fill it up with water, I say, we need to talk and figure out how to get back to where we were in our counseling sessions. In fact, we should probably head over to my office to discuss this so we're in a more professional setting. Startling, I jolt when Tacker's arm comes around my side, reaches for the faucet and twists it off. His hands then go to my shoulders, and he whirls me around to face him.
Just stop, he says softly. Stop with the counselor mode for just a moment, okay?
I just stare at him, knowing if I set aside my role as his counselor, I'm putting myself in danger. But I find myself giving a slight nod of acquiescence.
Put aside the fact that we have a professional relationship, he says, his hands squeezing me slightly. Pretend you and I met at a coffee shop, and we've continued to meet there for the last few weeks. And each time we've met, we've revealed a little more of ourselves to the other, peeled back layers with each cup of coffee we shared. Then there came a time where I got up the nerve to ask you out on a date. Would you have said yes?
I don't even need to give much thought to that scenario. Of course I'd say yes. So I nod.
Then I don't see what the problem is, Nora,
Tacker says.
You would see me if we were just two people meeting casually. I've fired you. I already have an appointment to see Dr. Dumbfuck.
Dumfries? I interject with a look of censure. If you're going to see another therapist, you at least need to take him seriously.
Dumfries, he affirms with a smile. I'm seeing him tomorrow, so you and I do not have a professional therapist-client relationship anymore. It's just that simple. Why can't you accept it?
My gaze drops a moment, trying to remember all the reasons I had gone over and over again in my head as to why we shouldn't be doing this. There are too many to count. Yet the real reason I'm hesitant doesn't have so much to do with the fact I'm his therapist, or was before he fired me, and everything to do with the fact that I'm a woman falling for a guy who has suffered a terrible trauma. Tacker may be moving too fast. He may not be ready for this. At some point, he will figure that out and break things off. Quite simply, I could get hurt. I lay it out to him with resolve in my tone. I'm worried you're not ready for this. He considers that, but merely shrugs.
What is this?
My jaw drops slightly. What is this? I repeat. How do I know? You said you wanted to kiss me last night. Then today you want to take me on a date and fire me. And now you're asking me what this is? See, that's exactly why I'm worried. Have you really thought this through, Tacker?
I see your point, he replies, his hands falling from my shoulders, only to push down into the front pockets of his slacks, dark gray and paired with a blue button-down shirt.
But yes, I've thought this through. The last few weeks, I've experienced things that have been surprising to me. I've smiled and laughed. I've done acts of service for others. And I've baked cookies with my teammates' partners while they were off playing hockey. I've shared jokes with my friends. I went back onto the ice, and it felt fucking amazing. I've definitely been on a high, and I had forgotten what it had felt like to actually feel good about things. Being angry and miserable had become so normal to me that I got comfortable with it, and I had just forgotten how to be happy.
He pauses, but I know he's not done. Tacker takes in a deep breath, then lets it out. His expression is solemn but committed.
I went 15 long months without considering there was a better life waiting for me out there, and now I've figured it out. It's there, waiting for me.
It's a beautiful speech. Clearly, he's put quite a bit of thought into this and done some soul searching. But still, I have my worries. What if you're misinterpreting gratitude to me for sharing my story with you as attraction? Because that's what helped you open up. And maybe you're just grateful to me. And that's translating into something more. I mean, you don't even know me. I can be bitchy at times, stubborn, too. I work too much, and I smell like horses most of the time. Let's face it, I'm not that great of a catch.
Tacker chuckles, removes a hand from his pocket, and takes one of my own in it. He swings our arms playfully. I'd like to sort of figure that out on my own, Nora. It's the whole point of asking you out on a date.
My eyes cut to the flowers in the vase. The sweetest of gestures that made my heart flutter. I want to feel more of that. I want to take a chance.
Besides, Tacker says, cutting into my thoughts, I do know you.
My eyebrows rise in reaction to the surety in his voice. You do?
You're kind, brave, strong, resilient, funny, and gentle. You have the respect of people. And you're brilliant, accomplished, a true wonder. Add in the fact you're super hot,
which makes up for you smelling like horses some of the time, and I think you're a pretty damn good catch.
What if this doesn't work? I ask. And for the first time tonight, I see a flash of worry in his eyes.
Isn't that a risk any time you act on an interest with someone?
It is, I admit quietly.
Look,
he says, giving a tug on my hand so I step in closer to him. His other hand goes to the nape of my neck, and his head dips down a bit closer.
I have no clue what's coming our way. I don't know if this will work. It's been so long since I've been on a date with a woman that I'm not even sure what to do.
Well, I say coyly, you've already kissed me, so that awkward part is out of the way.
Tacker laughs, pulling me all the way into his chest. I love the sound of it rumbling through his body.
When his other arm snakes around my back to hold me to him in a platonic embrace, my belly warms.
See, Nora, he says softly as he hugs me. I just want to banter with you. I'd like you to come to my games and watch me play. I want you to teach me how to ride a horse, and then we can go on a picnic together.
I snuggle into him, wrapping my arms around his waist, a smile playing at my lips. He's hooked me. And you're really ready? I ask, seeking a little more validation. Tacker leans back so he can look into my eyes. They're turbulent, but determined.
I'm scared shitless, Nora. As miserable as I was in the dark, I was comfortable there. Now I don't know what to expect. Everything is new. But deep down, I need to keep pushing forward. And I'm fairly sure it's you I'm supposed to do that with.
As a couple?
As a couple, he replies with a smile. Or as friends, if that's all it's supposed to be. But I'd prefer more than friends.
So would I think. But I'm too afraid to say the words out loud.
Chapter 22. Tacker. We're ending the team practice with battle drills. From the end zone face-off spot to either the left or right of the goalie, we pair up and battle for a goal. One on offense, the other on defense. We shoulder, bump, and juke our way across the short distance to the net. It's a 4 to 5 second drill that will make us sweat. Then it's over. We skate to the end of the line, where we wait to do it again. I got my cast off this morning, so my battle partner, Aaron, has been taking it a bit easy on me. Want to grab some dinner tonight? Aaron asks, then taps his stick against my leg. You know, since you stood me up last night. It's true. I was supposed to grab dinner with him last night, my new efforts to try to repair my friendship with him. But then things changed, and it was just more important for me to go back to Nora's ranch to talk things out with her. I knew damn well she wasn't going to go out on a date with me until we had a chance for her to get her worries off her chest. So, last night, after Nora listened to my reasoning and admitted she wanted to give it a try with me, friends, dating, whatever, we went out to a local taco truck and ate at a sun-blistered picnic table. Nora drank a beer, and I splurged on a Topo Sabores orange soda. It led into a discussion about our favorite childhood sweets, hot tamales for me. For Nora, it was discovering Snickers when she came to America. I'd learned that sweets were not a part of Nora's younger childhood when she lived in Albania or later in Kosovo. They simply couldn't afford the treats, which is why Besciana baking a cake for Nora's birthday was such a big deal. Nora asked more about my family, and the tone of the conversation was different. She wasn't in counselor mode. She was in, I'm interested in you, Tacker, and I want to get to know you better mode. I asked more about hers, and I wasn't hesitant in doing so. What happened to everyone after the massacre? I'd queried.
Helen told me they were all thrown in a mass grave.
Nora said. There was an underlying tone of sadness, but she was also matter-of-fact about it.
Later, Nato went in and exhumed them, identified those with DNA. Helen sent mine in, and everyone was found. They're all buried in a cemetery in Drenica.
Have you ever been back? I asked. She shook her head, grimacing slightly.
I don't know if I want to go back there. It's probably bad not wanting to, but I left that life behind. I'm an American now. Even after all these years, the memories of what happened there are painful. I don't know if I really want to subject myself to it.
It hit me hard when she'd said that. It was a potent reminder that although I've sort of awakened from the days of depression I'd been operating in, that no matter how much time passes, the crash and MJ's death will always stick with me.
But you don't want to hear about all that,
Nora said with a nervous laugh.
It's depressing and...
Impulsively, I reached out and took her hand. I want to talk to you about what happened to your family. I want you to be able to confide in me if you want. One day, maybe not now, I want to talk about your sister and how helpless you felt, because I felt the same way watching MJ die. It's something we share, Nora, so I don't want to ignore it. I want you to know that you have someone who truly understands.
I don't want to burden you,
she told me, running her thumb over the back of my hand. I can't ever recall a woman's touch affecting me so deeply. It's like all the nerve endings in my entire body were congregated right there in my hand. It was the most peaceful, calm experience I've ever had. Does it burden you if I tell you that on the day MJ and I were supposed to be married, I hiked to the plane wreckage? Nora's eyes widened with shock, then filled up with sympathy. I nodded, a sad smile playing at the corners of my mouth. I don't know if it was to punish myself or to have some connection to the last place MJ and I talked, but I sat out at the crash site for hours and just mulled over how it all happened and what I could have done to have prevented it. The plane was still there. The area was too remote for them to bother with removing it.
I'm so sorry,
Nora whispered. Don't be, I told her, my eyes locking onto hers. I'm glad I can tell you these things. No one else knows I did that.
Then I'm glad I can offer you that.
Her voice had been so sweet and sincere.
And no matter what happens with us, whether this progresses or we stay just friends, you can always talk to me about these things.
It was a promise I knew she'd keep, and it gave me a level of security I had not felt in an exceedingly long time. Nora and I sat on that picnic table for almost 3 hours as we simply talked. Some of it was heavy, some of it was not. What struck me the most as I was driving her to her house was there wasn't one single lull in the conversation, no matter if we were talking about death and grief or laughing over our shared love of The Office. It was a great first date.
Dude, Aaron says, smacking me a bit harder with his stick. Dinner tonight?
I can't, I say, willing the line we're in to go faster. As it is, there are 4 pairs of skaters in front of us, but there's an equal number on the other side. We're alternating.
Why not?
He asks suspiciously. Eric and Bishop take off, Bishop with the puck. They ram their shoulders into each other, legs braced and skates digging hard all the way to the net.
Why not?
Aaron demands, stepping into my line of vision. I reluctantly meet his worried gaze.
You okay? I feel horrible. He's worried something is wrong with me when, in fact, everything is right. Clearing my throat, I lean in toward him and whisper, I had a date last night.
You had a date?
He exclaims so loudly that every head turns our way. He gives me a shit-eating grin. You asshole, I mutter, giving him a slight push not meant to do anything but convey irritation. Play continues, the next set of skaters in our line taking off. Aaron looks slightly abashed, shrugging apologetically.
Sorry, but I'm just so shocked and stoked at the same time for you. Where did you meet her? And
Coach Perrone shrilly blows on his whistle, stopping the drills.
All right, guys, that will do for drills today. Team meeting tomorrow at 10 with a light skate to follow.
The men start dispersing, chatting along the way, all except my line. Bishop, Eric, Legend, and Dax skate up to me, forming a circle.
You're dating someone? Bishop asks.
Who?
Dax demands.
Where did you meet her?
Eric inquires.
Or if it's a he, that's cool too,
Legend adds. Rolling my eyes, I turn from the group, half irritated and half slightly charmed they care. They follow along, poking at me.
Come on, dude. Cough it up,
Aaron says.
We're just going to nag the hell out of you until you tell us.
I spin on them. With a huff, I admit, if you must be nosy bastards and need to know, then fine. It's Nora. They stare back blankly as other players file by us, exiting the ice. Finally, Bishop asks,
Isn't that, like, against the rules?
It would be if she was my therapist, but I fired her first, then asked her out on a date. Bishop's eyes darken with worry.
Tacker, you have to go to counseling. It's a requirement to stay on the team.
Some would be offended by the reminder, but really, I'm touched they all care so much. I hold a hand up.
Relax, I got in with another counselor, even had an appointment with him first thing this morning. It's all good. I also reported it to Christian, so management knows what I did.
All appearing relieved, Eric nudges me with a sly grin.
So, Nora, huh?
Shrugging, I try to play it off.
We have a connection.
Just how much of a connection?
Eric croons, waggling his eyebrows.
Oh, fuck off and grow up, I growl.
We just had dinner last night for our first date, and we're going out again tonight.
So I guess that's a no to dinner with me then, huh?
Aaron says in an exaggeratedly glum tone. Nora's way prettier than you, I reply blandly. The guys laugh, but then Dax asks a sobering question.
Are you ready for this, man?
I should feel lame for divulging what is a very personal and deep insight with these guys, but I decide to brave it. She turned on a fucking light in my dark room. She's the one who flipped the switch. I don't care if it's as my therapist or just as a beautiful woman I'm interested in, but she caused this change within me you guys have seen. So, yes, I'm ready to move forward and see where this thing between us goes.
All I needed to hear,
Aaron says with a slap on my back,
except I would like to book some time with my best friend in the near future, if it's not too much trouble.
We're going on a 4-day road trip, I mutter. I'll snuggle with you then. Aaron sidles up to me, lays his head on my shoulder, and bats his eyelashes.
Oh, I can't wait.
I shove him off with a chuckle.
Actually,
Legend says, by the hesitant tone in that one word, we all go silent. His cheeks are slightly red.
I have some news of my own.
Pepper's pregnant, Eric guesses.
No, not pregnant,
he replies with a dismissive wave. I'm not sure who knows it or not, but Pepper can't have kids. Legend had told me when I was at his house for Christmas Eve dinner last year, although I don't think that matters to them. They are both raising Charlie together, and they have talked about adoption in the future.
But, well, we sort of got married a few days ago.
Dead silence. We all stare at Legend, unsure if we heard him right, and if so, unsure of how to respond, until Dax hollers,
"Holy shit, dude! That's huge!"
A few of the other guys still skating glance our way with interest, but no one approaches.
"That's awesome,"
Bishop says, holding his hand out to Legend. They shake and do a half hug, then the rest of us move in for similar congratulations.
"Why the rush?"
Eric asks.
"Or rather, why the distinct lack of a big fancy wedding with good food and alcohol for all of us?"
"No rush,"
Legend says, starting toward the gate that will lead us off the ice toward the locker room. We all skate slowly along with him.
"But as we were talking about it after we got engaged, we quickly realized we didn't want a wedding. It wasn't important to us."
"Lucky,"
Bishop mutters with a hint of envy. He and Brooke are having a huge, lavish destination wedding this summer, as befits the only daughter of the Vengeance coach. But even as Bishop says that, I know there's nothing he'd deny Brooke. Besides, he's looking forward to getting shackled for life. I distinctly remember what that felt like, although I'm not quite sure I want to go there again. That might be one of those things the bad memories keep me from.
"Well, I just wanted you dudes to know,"
Legend goes on.
"I'll announce it at some point to the team, of course."
"Fuck that,"
Eric says as he reaches the gate and unlatches it. The ice has already been cleared.
"We're having a party at my house to celebrate your nuptials. You cannot do something this momentous without at least giving Pepper a grand wedding reception."
"I don't think,"
Legend starts to say, but he's cut off.
"You two are absolutely getting a party,"
Bishop affirms with his captain tone, the one that says he's not to be messed with.
"Damn right," Aaron pipes up. "It's bad luck not to celebrate a wedding."
"But low-key?"
Legend asks with worried eyes. Eric has thrown some legendary parties since we've come to the Vengeance, and they can get out of control.
"I promise,"
he says, even crossing his finger over his heart. I don't believe him for a second.
"Okay, then,"
Legend says with a grateful smile.
"We accept."
"This will be epic,"
Eric says with a little too much glee.
"No strippers,"
Bishop warns. Eric appears genuinely hurt.
"Dude, I'm a taken man. No need for strippers when I have Blue. But regardless, it will be a family affair. We'll have Billy there, of course. Strippers were so last year for me."
That's probably true. Eric's partying playboy ways have been completely curtailed since falling in love with Blue, which is fine. Aaron coming to the team fills the shoes of the resident bad boy who likes to party and screw as many chicks as he can. The puck bunnies around here won't go neglected, that's for sure. All of us are laughing and joking as if we don't have a care in the world as we head back into the locker rooms. It's just another testament to how good I'm feeling about my life lately, and how thankful I am that Nora came into it.
Chapter 23. Nora. My nerves have settled, and I'm actually enjoying myself at Eric and Blue's house, where we'd gathered to celebrate Pepper and Legend's nuptials. It's the first event Tacker and I have come to as an official couple, since I would definitely have to classify us as that now. It's been 10 days since he fired me, and we started dating. In that time period,
He was gone on a road trip for 4 days. On the other 6, we saw each other. Sometimes he'd just come out to the ranch for a few hours to help Raul out with physical labor. After, he'd join me on the porch for conversation. One night, he stayed for dinner with me and Raul. Sometimes he took me out to dinner, giving me a chance to get prettied up for an actual date. Night before last, I went to a vengeance game. Afterward, we went out for a private late dinner by ourselves. He hasn't brought more flowers, but one of the days he worked on the ranch with Raul, he brought me a Snickers bar and gourmet coffee beans, along with a case of Raul's favorite beer. Tacker is a genuinely thoughtful man, and he's not trying to be flashy with his attentions. It's just who he is. When we weren't together, there was texting and calls. It seems the floodgates of conversation have been opened, and it's a two-way street. Like any normal couple, we are in the beginning stages of a relationship where we are parched to learn all we can about the other person because we find them so fascinating. Conversation started naturally moving away from MJ's death and my family's massacre toward the good things in our lives. The one thing that gave me true peace of mind was that, true to his word, Tacker continued counseling with Dr. Dumfries, which meant he was still getting professional help to deal with his issues. And make no mistake, Tacker still has them. As one could imagine, there are still insecurities and lingering doubts. Guilt. I know from personal experience that just doesn't melt away without continued hard work. Thankfully, Tacker has remained transparent with me when he's having a tough time. He doesn't try to hide his sadness, nor does he try to temper his frustration if he's having a bad moment. But we talk it out. I'm not his therapist anymore, but that doesn't stop me from listening and advising, being there for him. Yes, in 10 days, the relationship has progressed. Deepened, for sure. So when Tacker asked me to come to this party with him, there shouldn't have been any hesitation on my part. It was a natural step, him bringing me into his vengeance fold and showing his team that we were a couple. And yet, I can't help thinking people will look down on me for dating my patient. My credibility as a counselor will be questioned for even letting this occur. It shows me that perhaps I'm still not fully comfortable with how things turned out between us. But on the flip side, I really like Tacker. A lot. He's ultimately a risk I am willing to take because I think he's just that special. Tacker assured me the team already knew about me and that everyone was happy for us. He told his first line mates, then word sort of spread to the others over the following days. Still, I was a ball of nerves when we showed up, my heart thumping hard in my chest. But that was an hour ago, and I'm completely fine now. Everyone was so gracious, even though I got a little bit of ribbing from the guys. Eric had bumped his shoulder against mine, nodded at Tacker, who had his hand on my lower back, and playfully said,
"Nora, you saucy vixen, ensnaring the big guy there."
I'd blushed, Tacker growled, and Eric just shot us both a mischievous wink before Blue stepped in to give me a welcoming hug. She had whispered, "I can't wait to hear all the details about how you two fell for each other." Something about the breathlessness in her voice, the hopeful romantic tone, makes butterflies circle in my tummy. Yes, I do think we're falling for each other, and it makes me feel giddy. Tacker and I walk around Eric and Blue's immense house, talking with various teammates and guests. Most I had met when they'd volunteered at the ranch, but some I had not. The mood is festive and upbeat, everyone coming together to celebrate Legend and Pepper's marriage. While she'd already been unofficially welcomed into the Vengeance family, now she was legally a family member. And it is a family. It's fascinating to watch how they all interact with each other. The absolute fondness in their expressions and the care in their voices, even if they are giving the other person hell about something. We make our way down to the basement, Tacker on a mission. He finds Billy down there playing video games in front of a large flat-screen TV with Dax. Tacker waits patiently. When the game ends, he boots Dax off the couch. I smile, watching Tacker hold his hand out to Billy, man to man, for a fist bump. Billy grins at him with adoration shining in his eyes. There's no doubt Tacker is his favorite, or that Tacker has a genuine touch with Billy. He has practice, of course. I'd learned that MJ had a disabled and wheelchair-bound older brother, and Tacker was exceptionally close to him. It's clear Tacker just has an innate gift within him to bond with those who need care and protection the most. Dax walks around the couch, coming to stand beside me as we watch Tacker and Billy start a new game. Tacker starts gentle smack-talking, and Billy laughs while they play.
So, you and Tacker, huh?
He asks, a smirk on his face.
What would possess you to start dating that asshole?
Tacker doesn't even miss a beat, his eyes pinned hard on the TV screen as he replies for me.
Because she has impeccable taste.
Dax roars with laughter. Leaning over the couch, he squeezes Tacker's shoulder briefly.
Of course she does.
Next thing I know, Dax has me by the elbow. As he starts to lead me away, he calls out to Tacker.
Got your woman. I'll return her safely.
You better,
Tacker calls back. Again, eyes still engaged fully in the game, but there's no mistaking the warning in his tone.
Or you'll regret it.
Dax leads me up the stairs, through the great room, and out onto the back patio where several people congregate, talking, eating, and drinking. I'm tugged along with him, right over to a small group of women. I recognize Blue, who I'd seen a bit earlier, and Brooke and Reagan, who had come out to Sharon Ranch that day with the team. There's another woman there, petite and stunning, with her dark hair and a pixie cut, who I don't know.
Nora,
Dax says as he releases my elbow.
I believe you know everyone but Pepper.
Of course, Pepper, the woman of the hour. She opens her arms to me, and I step in for a hug. When we pull apart, I say, congratulations on your marriage. Thank you, she gushes, pushing her hair behind her ears. I'm so glad you came with Tacker. I've been dying to meet you. Suddenly, a glass of wine appears in front of my face, held by Dax.
Here you go.
I accept it, not worrying about the fact Tacker doesn't drink. He hasn't minded me having a glass of wine or beer when we go out to dinner. Sometimes I do. Other times I don't, depending on my mood. Tacker assured me it was fine, as he wasn't much of a drinker anyway, so he wasn't bothered by the team's mandate he couldn't have alcohol. It works out, because I'm not much of a drinker either. Like I said, just a drink with a meal, sometimes.
And with that,
Dax says, with a slight bow and wink at Reagan.
I'm out of here. Unlike Tacker, I don't hang out with the girls.
Everyone laughs but me, because I don't get the joke. Reagan notices my perplexed expression as Dax disappears and explains, in an effort to get Tacker engaging with people, Dax sort of set him up. Yeah, Brooke pipes in with a snicker. Asked Tacker to check on Regan one day, and unbeknownst to poor Tacker, we were all there baking cookies for a charity event. We sort of pulled him inside, and we didn't give him a choice about leaving. Made him hang out with us for a few hours and actually have conversation. My jaw drops as I admit with all the admiration in the world, that's brilliantly devious. Totally, Pepper adds with a giggle. But we all love Tacker so much. So the team sort of came together as a whole, determined to keep pushing at him to rejoin our world, so to speak. Well, he has an incredible support system with all of you, I tell the ladies. And with you, Blue says pointedly. You came into his life at the exact right time. Serendipity. I can't argue with that, except to point out, or he came into my life at exactly the right time. Blue beams back. I love that. I genuinely believe when true love comes along, there's an exceptionally good reason for it to happen at the moment it does. I blink at her casual use of the word love, because we are nowhere near that. Hell, we've only shared a handful of kisses these past 10 days.
No way can I even consider being in love with him.
If I can have everyone's attention.
We hear being yelled from the double French doors that lead into the house. Eric stands there with the champagne glass in hand, looking very self-important. He's such a spectacle, Blue mutters, but it's loaded with so much affection.
If everyone would come into the great room, please,
he says with a grand sweep of his hand and a disarming smile thrown at Blue from across the patio. He's a fool, she murmurs as she starts hurrying his way. But he's my fool, and I love him. Everyone moves into the house, Brooke chatting with me along the way, inviting me to watch some home games with her. Once inside, I see Tacker standing beside Billy in his motorized wheelchair. Eric had upgraded the house with an elevator, and he'd made all the rooms handicap accessible for the young man. Even though Billy still lives at a group home, by his choice, Tacker told me he spends a lot of time here at Eric's house. The first line couples all seem to come together. Legend and Pepper, Brooke and Bishop, Reagan and Dax. I take that as my cue, moving over to Tacker. Eric posts himself near the fireplace, and Blue takes her place at his side. Everyone pushes in to listen.
As you all know,
Eric says as he surveys the crowd,
we're all gathered here today to celebrate the marriage of Legend and Pepper.
Applause breaks out with a few whistles. Legend pulls his wife into his side, gazing at her with such a loving expression on his face that my breath catches.
Yes, yes,
Eric says with a laugh, using his free hand to help quiet the crowd.
Yes, we're here to celebrate these two lovebirds, but Legend threatened to kick my ass if I made a big deal about it. In fact, he specifically forbade gifts or speeches of any kind.
Laughing, everyone waits for Eric to continue defying his friend.
So I'm not going to give a speech about them, he says.
Then I see him shoot a subtle smile at Bishop before he turns to face Blue.
Instead, I'm going to talk about this woman.
Blue's face turns almost crimson, which is made inherently brighter by the fact her hair is a bright blonde. She even takes a stuttering step back, as if he's got a bomb on him or something. Eric isn't about to let her get away, though. He reaches out and snatches her hand, pulling her right into his space. He hands his champagne glass off to a teammate. Then, to everyone's shock, he drops down to one knee before Blue.
That's ballsy,
Tacker murmurs from beside me, and I can't help but giggle. I look up at him, and his return gaze is filled with amusement. Eric is now brandishing a black velvet box that's opened. While I can't see the details, there's a huge sparkler of a ring nestled inside. Blue gasps, staring at Eric in shock.
Blue, he says softly, some may think this is too soon. I say I've waited a lifetime for this. Still others may say I haven't thought things through enough, but I say I've been doing nothing but thinking. Even more will say I haven't planned well, and I would have to say the planning is all done. Meaning I've talked to Billy about this. Several times, in fact, because I wanted to make sure that when I asked you to be my wife, he would be equally as accepting of me being his brother-in-law. Luckily, your brother is incredibly smart and handsome, just like me.
And here, Eric takes a moment to search the crowd, locking eyes on Blue's brother. His head is lolling from side to side, his teeth flashing in the biggest smile imaginable. It's obvious Billy knew this was coming from the way he's bouncing in his chair with excitement. Eric shoots him a wink, then turns to Blue.
As you can see, I've got it all figured out. You, me, and Billy are going to lead an incredibly beautiful life together. If you will just say yes and agree to be my wife.
Taking the ring out of the box, Eric slides it onto Blue's finger, which is a feat in and of itself as her entire hand is shaking like crazy. There's no formal answer given by Blue. She merely flings herself into Eric's arms, knocking him backward from his kneeling position in front of her onto his back. She then lays a kiss on him that says, yes, yes, Yes. Everyone starts cheering. Eventually, Eric and Blue surface to a standing position. People surge to offer congratulations. Tacker and I hang back, waiting for the crowd to thin. His arm comes up around my shoulder, and he steps in closer to me as we watch the happy couple. I don't have to look at his face to feel the joy radiating off him. I imagine engagements or weddings may be difficult for him. But there's no denying the fact Tacker has reached a point he can actually engage in true happiness for the things his friends have that he no longer does. I had an amazing time at Eric and Blue's. The party got a little crazy as the alcohol flowed freely. At one point, Eric grabbed Blue and jumped into their pool, fully clothed. She didn't seem to mind, though, as they spent a good chunk of the night lip-locked. Luckily, Billy had been taken back to the group home when he started getting tired, so he didn't have to witness all that engagement debauchery. Tacker walked me to my door, like every other night we've had a date. Hand in hand up the steps, stopping just under the yellow porch light. Just like every other night, I had a million nerves fluttering at the thought of a goodnight kiss. Like every other night, he dips his head and brushes his mouth against mine. Except, tonight, our heads seem to tilt, and our mouths open just a bit wider. The kiss extends, and Tacker's hand comes to the nape of my neck. It's a touch I love, possessive and controlling. I can't help but lean into him because his kiss feels like magic, mesmerizing and pulling me under. Tacker's tongue touches mine, and a million pulses of pleasure soar through my entire body. Groaning, I kiss him back, my hands going to his head to pull him into me. Tacker makes a harsh sound within his chest, pushing me into the door. His body presses into me, all hard muscles and strong legs pinning me there, with that one hand still gripping the nape of my neck. I can't think when he's kissing me, which is why it takes a few moments to realize he's pulled back, with an inscrutable expression on his face.
I'll call you when I get home, he says gruffly.
Or you could kiss me again, I say, with a hopeful, suggestive lift to my eyebrows. Tacker's smile is soft as he shakes his head.
I don't want to rush you.
I take stock of his tone. Commanding. He feels strong about this, taking it slow. And I'm okay with that. Sort of. I don't feel rushed, I say. I mean, I'm incredibly attracted to him and I want more. He wants it too. I felt it pressed against my belly. If my gaze were to drop, I know I'd be staring at an impressive bulge against his jeans.
I know,
he replies, his tone turning a little hesitant.
But I'm not sure when it's the right time. While so many things are clear to me where you're concerned, I don't want to do anything to fuck this up. I want it to be absolutely perfect.
I'm overwhelmed with a swooning sensation that he wants our first time to be perfect. And my heart swells, knowing he's just not sure how to go about it. Somehow, I think it will be perfect if we just keep kissing. But I can't do much more than nod my head with a gamine smile. That perfect time will come.
I know it will,
he says, his eyes dropping longingly to my mouth.
Good night, Nora.
Good night, I whisper. I stand at my door as Tacker gets in his truck. When he waves, I lift a hand in return before he guns it out of my driveway and down the gravel road that leads out. Shutting the door, I lean against it and ponder what just happened. Two people who weren't looking for anything, yet found something anyway. What that long-term something is, we don't know. But it's a daily revelation. What I do know is we're attracted to each other on more than just an emotional, spiritual, and intellectual level. While we haven't acted on it past a few hot kisses, my lips still tingling from the one just moments ago. We're going to. Not sure when, though. Tacker says he doesn't want to rush me. He doesn't want to fuck up. He wants it to be absolutely perfect. And then it hits me. Tacker's worries are going to be there tomorrow and the next day. Given everything he's been through, this must be an incredibly hard step to take. It's one thing to become interested in a woman after coming out of a grieving period over the woman he once thought he'd spend his entire life with. It's another to become intimate. It's the deepest connection two individuals can make. And I imagine if there's anything that's going to cause Tacker doubt, it's this. One other thing I know, that whenever we decide to move forward, there won't be a feeling on my part of being rushed. There's no way Tacker could ever fuck this up. And I believe it will be perfect.
Chapter 24, Tacker. I'm that strange mixture of tired and exhilarated at the same time as I unlock my apartment door. I've been burning the candle a bit at both ends between balancing my hockey career and my dating life. So weird, dating life. So weird that I'm dating at all. I remember what it was like from when I first started dating MJ, juggling a schedule that varied every week, road trips, and trying to sneak in quality time, late-night phone calls that could go on for hours. It's all mostly the same with Nora, but if I have to be honest, this whole thing seems a little more exciting, a little more fulfilling. Tonight, being at Eric and Blue's house celebrating the marriage of my friends Legend and Pepper, all I can say is it wouldn't have felt right if Nora hadn't been there with me. I am already considering her to be a part of my family with the Vengeance. I can only assume that's because I've come out of the longest funk of funks, so perhaps it's just natural that everything seems just a little more. Regardless, I try not to overanalyze, but rather just enjoy. I step across my threshold into my bare apartment. All my good intentions to buy furniture have sort of been abandoned now that I'm actively back on the roster. I haven't had a spare bit of time to look into it more. Closing the door, I engage the bottom lock, deadbolt, and chain. I'm not really worried for myself, but this isn't the greatest of neighborhoods, so might as well be safe. Just as my hand drops away from the chain, someone knocks on my door. It startles me a moment. I actually jump backward before leaning in to put my eye to the peephole. I'm stunned to see Nora on my stoop. I hasten to unlock everything, then swing the door open. Nora greets me with a sheepish grin, rocking back and forth on the balls of her feet.